On October 20th, 1977, lead singer Ronnie Van Zant, guitarist Steve Gaines, and backup singer Cassie Gaines of the band Lynyrd Skynyrd died in a plane crash. I was sitting at a rest area with some of my closest friends when we heard the news on the radio, and my friend Bubba immediately offered up a tribute of Sweet Home Alabama on his ever-present guitar. Bubba was my first guitar teacher. When I outgrew the silk six-string classical guitar that a family friend handed down to me, Bubba took me shopping for my first steel-string guitar, a sunburst Castilla with a hummingbird pick plate. He taught me to play all the cool guitar leads, Sweet Home Alabama, Stairway to Heaven, Simon and Garfunkel, and lots of John Denver. But more importantly, Bubba taught me to play all the songs in the J.C. and Company repertoire. J.C. and Company, Jesus Christ and Company, was the name of our 30-member strong singing group at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Pflugerville, the church where I was confirmed. We weren't a formal choir. We were more of a joyful noise choir. Some members of our congregation loved us, especially our parents. Some members of our congregation stayed away on the Sundays our guitars and tambourines took over the chancel steps for I Saw the Light or Pass It On. They believed that the organ was the only instrument approved by God. They believed the pastor allowed J.C. and Company to sing only because his three children were part of the group. I can't overestimate the importance of J.C. and Company and Emmanuel Lutheran Church on my teenage self. Outside of school, basketball, and home, everything important in my life pretty much happened at church. And because Pflugerville, as I knew it, was not the sprawling Pflugerville you know now, but was instead a one stoplight, population 444, close-knit German community, almost all my friends and teammates went to our church as well. It was a wonderful church to grow up in. And from those years, I learned these things: that divorce is unacceptable, that abortion is wrong, that Jews killed Jesus, that there was really no difference between the life experiences of the 314 white students in my high school and the two black students. We were all the same. There certainly was no such thing as prejudice or racism. Notice I said what I learned and not what I was taught. That's because while I know what I heard and felt and thought and learned, I'm not sure what people were trying to teach me when maybe I wasn't listening closely enough or didn't listen long enough to what their intended lessons were. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe the lessons that I needed them to teach me, they hadn't even learned yet. This February, while I was on sabbatical, I spent the month of February at home. Home in Kyle, after home in Raleigh, Hickory, Meisenheimer, Ashboro, Manor, Dripping Springs, and Lake Travis. Home for the first time in 40 years, without a job, college, seminary, or young children to take responsibility for. Home for the first time in 40 years with time to ride my bike, play my guitar, and work on making the perfect buttermilk biscuits. Time to walk the dogs without needing them to take care of their business quickly. Time to watch the Waltons and Little House on the Prairie reruns without worrying about what I was leaving undone. Time to learn how to use my new sewing machine so I'd be ready for my quilting retreat. Time to pray without rushing to finish so I could go do the things I was praying about. And time to think about who I am and how I came to be this way. Learning what I did as I was growing up, how did I come to be divorced myself, a supporter of a woman's right to choose, a person dedicated to fighting anti-Semitism with education and action, and a declarer of Black Lives Matter, and a sort of professional lesbian. I learned most of what I now believe by leaving home. When we first moved to Pflugerville, I was literally the only kid I knew whose parents were divorced. I was told in Sunday school that divorce was a sin and that people who were divorced were of questionable character. Of course, I was taught all these lessons by people who had known each other for years and had no idea that a child of divorce had entered their midst unannounced. I had a child's conviction that my parents were perfect and they were divorced, and that therefore divorce couldn't be as horrible as all that. But it was many years later when I learned that divorce can be the only prescription sometimes for an unhealthy marriage, and that the proper role for me in others' divorces is never judge and jury, no matter what else it might be. I learned from the young women I coached in the 1980s who became pregnant that abortion was much more complex than I had learned in my sheltered upbringing. I made the decision rather easily not to let young women who had had abortions return to the basketball team that I coached. I was afraid if I gave them that option, I was being complicit, encouraging them to end the pregnancy so they could get back to what they loved. I remember my assistant coach, an older and wiser woman, asking me after I'd told one player she couldn't return, "Karen, how long are you going to punish her? Don't you think she's hurt enough?" I began to think differently about abortion when it became real, not theory. In 1989, when I was carrying my younger daughter, and the best tests they had at the time indicated she had Down syndrome, I made the decision to carry her to term. I couldn't choose otherwise. She was my baby, my one out of a billion possibilities of sperm meets egg, and she was a gift. She did not have Down syndrome, which I discovered after making my decision. And here is what I learned from that experience. What I came to learn was only what my decision was, not what every woman's should be. And because the title of my sermon is Sweet Home Alabama, and if you're aware of all that's going on in that state, I have to say to you, pray. Pray for Alabama and Georgia and Texas and women and men and children. I learned that my Lutheran pastor was steeped in the teachings of Martin Luther, a man who shined so much light into the world but was himself a horrible anti-Semite. I learned to tell a different story of Jews and the cross and the ones who would eventually call themselves Christian. I learned the stories of the Holocaust and the settlement of Israel and promised to correct the misinformation about the Jews every chance I had. I learned to understand my own faith better and to follow Jesus more closely from the powerful faith of rabbi friends and a Jewish woman named Carolyn, who lost her family to the Holocaust. I learned from witnessing the experiences of the black athletes I coached and taught that there was so much I didn't know about living in black skin. I learned lessons that history books never taught me and history teachers never taught me. And I learned that as much as I'd learned, I still didn't know enough. I learned to say Black Lives Matter, and to know that what I mean is Black Lives Matter too, and that as a country, we have a long history of not acting like it. I have learned that being adult is hard, that being human is hard. Here's what I wish I had learned growing up. That, as Richard Rohr says, information is not transformation. That I am a beloved child of God with nothing to prove and nothing to lose. That I must learn to love my neighbor as myself, but that I can't get there without getting to know my neighbor and myself. That people are usually doing the best they can, but as Maya Angelou said, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. that we cannot expect people to know how we're hurting unless we're vulnerable enough to tell them. That it is so much easier to tear people down than to build them up, and that either way the results are often irreversible. And that, as the Trappist monk Thomas Merton once said, as long as we're on the earth, the love that unites us will bring us suffering by our very contact with one another, because this love is the resetting of a body of broken bones. Even saints cannot live with saints on this earth without some anguish, without some pain. There are two things people can do about the pain of disunion with other people. They can love, or they can hate. There was one more thing I learned growing up, that homosexuals were perverted and suitable for the butt of jokes. I didn't have to wait to unlearn that one, though I did need refresher courses now and then. Someone very important to me was already trying to help me understand and accept myself. My friend Bubba. When Bubba was a senior, I was 2 years behind him, he went to a church camp called Growth School. The camp was held at Texas Lutheran College, and Bubba came back fired up, sure of himself, sure of God. It was a mountaintop experience for him, and he encouraged me to go the next year, which I did. And I had a similar experience to him, with one exception. Well, that's not really true. There was no exception. See, Bubba came back from his growth school experience with a crush on a girl. And I did too. And I had no idea what to make of it, and I had no one to tell except Bubba. I don't even know how to explain it, I told him on a lazy summer afternoon when he was teaching me the rhythm part for taking care of business. But if I was a guy, I would marry her. He stopped playing for a moment, then started another song, Annie's song, one of the great love songs of all time. And he gave me his crookedest grin. But then he switched to serious. It's okay to feel that way, he said. Love is love. He was ahead of his time. I thought about that a lot on sabbatical because one of the things I did was to find myself a guitar teacher, a 19-year-old guitar whiz who can play anything he hears, who is a patient and gifted teacher, who will teach me anything I want to learn, whose only drawback seems to be that when I asked him to teach me the intro to Sound of Silence, and he wasn't sure he knew it, I said, you know, Simon and Garfunkel. And he said, wow, Garfunkel, that's an interesting name. He's not Bubba, but he's enough like Bubba that for an hour a week, I get to be young again, and musical again, and creative. I only saw Bubba once that I remember after we both left home for college. It was 27 years later, on the day I was ordained here at MCC Austin. I was sitting in what was Reverend Robin's office at the time, having just finished an interview with the local news. The papers and the TV stations both had been following my story since my ordination journey had begun in the Presbyterian Church. Now they were covering the end of it. A curly-headed man with a crooked grin stuck his head in the door and said, I wouldn't miss this for anything. It was Bubba. And I have something for you, he said. It was a picture of J.C. and company in all our drab, brown, and gingham-checked splendor. Bubba died soon after that of pancreatic cancer. Part of what was wonderful about my sabbatical was being on the road, and part of what was wonderful about it was being home, both in the present and in my memories. Thomas Wolfe wrote in his book, Look Homeward, Angel, You can't go back home again to your family, back home to your childhood, back home to a young man's dreams of glory and of fame, back home to places in the country, back home to the old forms and systems of things which once seemed everlasting but which are changing all the time. You can't go back home to the escapes of time and memory. Well, for all the ways I believe that is true, I also believe that it's not quite the whole story. We began this morning with a story about Jacob, son of Isaac and grandson of Abraham. When it came time for Jacob to marry, his father told him, "You must marry someone like us, one of our people, and you must journey a long way, all the way to Haran, to find such a person." So Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. And he took a stone and he put it under his head for a pillow. And he had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, a stairway to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending. And there above it stood God. And God said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Maybe you can go home again. Or maybe a version of you can go home again. Hopefully a better, kinder, more patient, loving version. Steely strong, but not afraid to be gentle and vulnerable. And perhaps going home again can be fine, can be healing, can be a blessing if you remember this constant. Through all the people, those who've loved me and those who've hurt me, those I've loved and those I've hurt, those who taught me truth and those who misled me, those who taught me things that I believe are true and the ones who taught me things that they believe are true, those from home and those I've met on the road, through them all, there has been one constant, which I forget at my own peril. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back home. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Amen.